Tango Tango Papa 1765, August 11, 2013.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from a service plaza along the New York State Thruway. So I'm on my way to deliver Sunday afternoon to Johnstown, New York. Then after that, I deliver early Monday morning in Lewiston, Maine. So I'll have to time it so that I get to the first drop on the load to to Johnstown, New York. I'll have to time it so that I get there right when I'm supposed to be there. Assume that I'm probably going to be there for 3 hours or more, and then it's probably a good assumption to make that it's going to take about 7 hours, maybe not quite, but it should take about, you know, I should allow that much, 7 hours to get from Johnstown, New York to Lewiston, Maine. So got my work cut out for me tomorrow. So weather-wise, it's been cool. This evening it's supposed to get down into the 50s. Now that when I looked, I don't know, I haven't looked here where I'm parked at, but over in the other part of the state in Buffalo, it was supposed to get down to 54 for the low. So I'm assuming that it's going to be at least that low here where I'm at. I'm kind of more in the eastern part of upstate New York, so probably as cool or even cooler. So I think that we're moving into an early fall. Now I might be wrong, but it seems to me that we are kind of moving into an early fall. Now I know that some parts of the country are still having hot weather, the South in particular, but it's not as hot as it could be. Even when, you know, when I was in Texas on July the 4th, it could have easily been 10 degrees more than what it was. So I think that it's been a kind of a cooler summer, and I think we're going to move into we are moving into an early fall. And who knows, probably an early winter. And so that's just it's called the weather. And there's really there's no political reasons for it. It's just the weather, and the weather does what the weather does, and there's not a whole lot you can do about it, you know. And it's silly to get upset with it, or to think that it's you know, that man somehow controls it. That's absurd. So, and it's very arrogant and egotistical to think otherwise. However you think that. So, in any case, just deal with it. So, I've got a bunch of, I've got some comments, a little short comments that Ian sent me, little MP3 files, and I haven't really listened to any of them. I don't know if he's asking questions or most of these are about the longest one's 1 minute and 34 seconds, and the shortest one is 38 seconds. Then I've got some, a couple more comments from Scott, scottpodcast.com, and I've also got a Voxer conversation that I was having with listener Jeremy. And we were kind of back and forth, and we ended up kind of talking about schools and so on and so forth, and homeschooling, and you know, and I think it might be kind of an interesting conversation. You know, the thing with the Voxer, I've played some, you know, recently, and it kind of causes people to want to, it seems to me, it causes people to sort of want to join into the conversation. And so you can easily do that. If you want to send me a comment on Voxer, it's very easy. You have to have the app, of course, either on your the iOS version or you have the Android version. Very easy to do. You install it, and then you sign in to Voxer using your Facebook credentials. And if you're friends with me on Facebook, that will connect us. And then you can actually send me a voice comment, and we can actually have a conversation on there. And so it's Voxer's a kind of a quick and easy way to send comments. And I do have the ability to transfer them from my phone, because that's where I'm using Voxer at. Transfer them from my phone into the computer, and then I can easily kind of insert them into the podcast like I would any other audio file. And so it's kind of nice. It sort of makes for a more interactive kind of experience. Now, before I play any of these, start playing any of these files, I'm always having discussions back and forth with different people, and it sort of occurred to me that, you know, you hear this term, people can't think out of the box, or their minds are closed, and all of us have heard those terms, then those concepts, all of our lives, and of course people are always accusing each other, your mind's closed, or I'm trying to keep an open mind, and so on and so forth. Now, what I don't know, it's you know, those are good analogies, and they kind of get the point across, but what kind of I was thinking about today earlier, I sort of realized, let's say that there is some sort of a concept, and it's just, you know, and I'm going to use one, gravity. You know, we've had it, certainly my entire life, I've had it pounded into my head that gravity is a property of matter, and it is a pull. Somehow the Earth is pulling on us. And, you know, or the moon, if you're standing on the moon is pulling on you. Or if you're standing on Mars, Mars is pulling on you. Or if you're, if you're in the solar system, then the sun is pulling on you. You know, gravity is a pull. Well, how do we know that? We don't. There's no way we can know it. In fact, I believe that gravity is a push. I believe that we're being pressed against the Earth, that something's pressing us against the Earth. I think it's a push. Now, there are a lot of people that cannot, for whatever reason, they cannot even think that you know, it's been pounded into their head that it's a pull, and that's what's accepted, and they can't even, for the sake of argument, they can't even think the other way. They can't relax and think, well, is it possible? And so there are a lot of, that's just an example, but there are a lot of situations, let's say economics, for example. People cannot, they've got some construct in their head, and they cannot let go of certain thoughts, and it sort of blinds them to other thoughts, and so therefore they cannot, they're sort of clinging to certain thoughts or concepts, and they cannot let go, they cannot suspend, so that they can see the entire picture. And an example of that would be, you've heard me say it probably 1,000 times, and I'm going to continue to say it. If you think about economics, simply take the money out of the equation. Just forget about the money. Forget about dollar bills, because those are simply, or pesos or francs or euros or whatever, those are simply a lira, those are simply a medium of exchange. Forget about the money for a minute. Take that out of the equation. Now, can you do that? A lot of people cannot. They can't take that out of the equation. Or they can't take the raw materials out of the equation. They think, oh, well, raw materials are worth so much, or labor is worth so much. Take that, just forget about that. Take that out of the equation. You've got people that, you know, you have the raw materials, but you've got people that are producing goods and services. They're busy doing what they do, producing goods and services, distributing the goods and services, etc., etc. And then you got people that are absorbing those goods and services. That, you know, now some of those people are working. They're absorbing goods and services. The people that are producing are also absorbing. But then you got the upper class, that I like to call them. That, you know, the theory being that they're just kind of sitting around watching Oprah Winfrey or maybe Dancing with the Stars. But they're just kind of sitting around or maybe they work for the government and they're just absorbing and they're not really producing anything that's of any value. And they're just kind of consuming. They're not really adding anything. They're just absorbing. And so, and some of that's legitimate. I'm not trying to imply that all these people are lazy. We're just for the sake of argument, for the sake of the thought experiment. If you can do the thought experiment, you simply forget about the money, you forget about that, and take any kind of judgment out of, you know, are these people lazy or whatever else, you know, because some people just automatically knee-jerk. Forget about that if you can. Now, maybe you can't, and then you can't really participate in the thought experiment. But if you can just kind of set those aside and forget about it for a moment, you've got people that are working, busy producing goods and services, and then people that aren't. Now, you have two elements in the experiment. So if you can imagine more people, if you have a larger percentage of the total population busy producing goods and services, and a smaller percentage of people that are just doing nothing but absorbing goods and services, then you can understand that the more people are producing, the higher the standard of living it is for everybody. Because, you know, the more people, it's an additive thing. The more that's being produced, the more there is for everyone. The more that's being produced, the higher the standard, the overall standard of living. Now, the opposite of that, converse of that, is also true. If you have a shrinking number, you shrink the number of people that are actually producing goods and services, and therefore you shrink the amount of goods and services, and you still have and you have a larger percentage of people that are watching Oprah, they're not producing anything of value, then the standard of living goes down for everybody because there's less. There's more people absorbing, less being produced. And so if you think about this, you know, people want to think that, well, automation is bad. You know, we need to bring back all this labor. And, you know, automation is actually a good thing because, you know, if you have You know, because the idea is, well, it used to take 100 people to, let's say it took 100 people to make a toothpick, and now it only takes one per, you know, now it only takes five people. You know, and that's a bad example, but let's say it takes, change that to something else. Let's say it took 100 people to produce a car, and now it only takes five. Because you have these factories that are highly automated, sort of highly roboticized, and it doesn't take as many employees to produce a lot of stuff, so the productivity goes up. So the productivity is, the higher the productivity, the better it is for all of us. You know, but the other way of thinking is that, well, if you have a lower number of jobs and robots are doing everything and people, they're just sitting around, they don't have anything to do. Well, you put them to work doing something else. So higher productivity is always good because you produce more. The more you can produce, the more affordable it becomes for everybody. So, but you have to, in order to sort of participate fully in this thought experiment, you have to be able to let go of certain things and sort of just kind of put them out of your mind, just set them aside, just lay that down, set it aside, and we'll just play with these other two elements and not, you know, not be tied to this other thing, you know, and so some, you know, that's an example. You got to be, if you can really just let go and suspend your knee-jerk reactions, then you can kind of participate in the thought experiment. But otherwise, and this is just one example, but otherwise you are, you're sort of tied to whatever, and you can't let go, and it becomes impossible for you to really have an open mind. Even though you say your mind is open and so on and so forth, it's not really. Because for whatever reason, you're tied to different ideas. And you can't let go of those different, you're enslaved to those ideas. And of course, that goes to resentment and so on and so forth, because resentment makes you a slave. All who sin are slaves. And that's one of the main reasons people are sort of tied to different ideas. Resentment is a sin. Resentment separates you from who you could be. Resentment forces you to become externalized. It forces you to become emotionalized. Then someone is able to agitate that emotional state, and you can't think. Someone's able to agitate that emotional state, and you just go right back to their, you'll take their suggestions and act exactly as predicted. They're pulling the puppet string, and you dance, but you think it's your own idea. So, but it's what you want. The ideal is to be able to be objective, and you should be. If you're really in an objective state, then you can consider. You know, you don't have to take someone else's word for something. You know, the science teacher told you gravity is a pull, for example. Well, you don't have to take the science teacher's word, and you don't have to take Newton's word. You can think of it yourself. Well, is it a push or is it a pull? What makes more sense? I believe it's a push. So, but that's just an example. You know, and when it comes right down to it, how do you know, you know, you have a magnet, you know, and let's say you have a magnet, or you have two magnets, one magnet and a piece of metal, or you have two magnets, how do you know that we're it's always magnetic pull this, magnetic pull that. How do we know that's a pull? Do we know? How do you actually know that? Because it could be a push as well. It really could. You know, there's really, you know, how do you know that that whether it's a push or a pull? You know, and can you visualize that in your mind? Because it would work exactly with gravity, it would work exactly the same way, whether it's a push or a pull. It would be exactly the same. The physics of it, the geometry of it, so on and so forth, would be precisely the same. All of the equations are exactly the same. But is it a push or is it a pull? But if you're tied to an idea that someone kind of pounded into your head and you sort of bought into it and you're sort of locked in, you can't suspend it long enough to consider, you know, is it really a push or is it a pull? Is it really a pull? Is it a push? You can't think of these things for yourself. You simply are taking someone else's word for it. Now maybe it's fine to take other people's words for some things, but you've also got to be able to think of these things yourself. You've got to be able to work these things out yourself. You can't just take someone else's word for everything. And our society is full of people that cannot think for themselves. When it comes right down to it, they cannot think for themselves, even though they'll swear up and down that they do, that they're able to reason things out for themselves. And the evidence of this, look around you. Why are so many people so miserable? Why are so many people constantly at each other's throats? You know, so anyway, I'm going to go ahead and start with some of Ian's comments, and I haven't really listened to any of these, so we'll just kind of pick one and start it. So here is Ian.
You were mentioning this morning, Tom, on solving application problems by going down and double-clicking and deactivating an app and then bringing it back, like let it reboot, you might say. A lot easier than your computer thing. I find once in a blue moon that a good method for me is to dump the app completely. I did this the other day with YouTube, and re-download it from the App Store. So it comes down fresh from the wherever, cloud. And it just like works perfectly. So I don't know if you've mentioned that method, but of course that's the sort of the ultimate method that I think that if I have a real problem. So I'm just listening to your podcast now, and I may have more comments or I may not, depending on what's going on. I hope you have a good day in Nebraska and that you get a load that's going to bring you somewhere interesting. Sometimes you should talk about the different people that you're meeting in all these different places and talking to. I'm always interested to hear the human interaction you have. So we'll talk to you later, Tom. And that was just one small thought.
Okay, well, thank you, Ian. Yeah, now what you're doing when you re-download, you know, because that was, you know, that's one of the things that I've done for years, you know, especially on computers. Now, I don't have to, it's been a long time since I've had to do that because I haven't been using Windows for some time, but that was one of the tricks. A lot of times you could just uninstall something and then reinstall it. Now, probably what you're doing, you know, the apps are far, you know, they're far smaller than a full-blown computer program would be. What you're probably doing is getting rid of the cache, C-A-C-H-E. You know, you can do that, and provided that you're actually updating the apps on a regular basis, you probably already have the, you know, it's kind of unlikely that the app itself would get corrupted because they're fairly small files. Sometimes they're just 3 or 4 or 5 megabytes. Sometimes they're bigger than that. But it is possible that the file, you know, the app itself could become corrupted. Far more likely that the cache gets corrupted. And but that, you know, it's so easy to uninstall and then bring it back that's just as good as any. So that is an option to get, you know, to eliminate something and then bring it back. But that's a I've done that many times in the past on Windows computers. So let's see. So let's go ahead and listen to another one of Ian's comments. So here we go.
Good morning again, Tom. I heard you discussing Chromecast dongle today. And just one small comment I heard on different shows I'm listening to about computers is that you have to have a very robust Wi-Fi signal to get this thing to really work. Now, in my case, I have my router is 50 feet at one end of the basement. My TV is 50 feet at the other end of the basement. And the dongle would be sort of behind the TV, which doesn't do wonders for a Wi-Fi signal. So I'm wondering if I bought it, if I would be able to get a good connection. But it does sound like a marvelous little thing. Number one would be for me would be YouTube's, which I could play on the TV, which would be pretty nice 32-inch flat screen TV instead of my 9-inch iPad. So just a small comment there, Tom.
Okay, well, thank you, Ian. Again, so Michael had actually has a Chromecast. So he sent me a comment here. He says, the Chromecast is amazing. I got mine with the Nexus 7 with the 3 months free of Netflix. So it comes with 3 free months of Netflix. The Chromecast is powered by a micro USB that comes with it that you can plug into the wall, or if you have a powered USB on your TV to plug it into, because a lot of TVs have USB ports, and so you just plug the thing in and then plug it in and it powers it from the USB, or it comes from with a wall thing. The great thing is that it is its own device. So he says, the great thing is it is its own device. It doesn't stream off your phone and tablet. See, now I was kind of misunderstanding it. You just use your phone and tablet to control it. For example, Netflix, you can start it on your phone and then push your Chromecast button on the app, and then your Chromecast fires up and streams at 1080p. You can then turn your phone or tablet off. I use it over 4G and 3G in the truck. Google Play movies and music, Netflix and YouTube. Work on it now, and you can mirror tabs through the Chrome browser on it. I heard Hulu, HBO, Go, and many other apps are in the process of putting Chromecast buttons in their apps. It has an open API, so the possibilities are endless. Sorry, this is so long. I can type this mess better than I can speak it. And so the way, you know, that it works is that you plug this thing, this dongle, into the HDMI port on your television, into an open HDMI port, and then you have it, you know, it's going to have a USB cable, and so one end, you know, it's a micro USB, so that plugs into the Chromecast thing itself, and if your TV has, many TVs have USB ports, so then you would simply plug it into the USB port, or you would just plug it into a you know, like a wall socket USB adapter, and I think it probably comes with those. Those are, you know, I'm sure it probably does. You know, where it's just a little, basically a little power block, and you just plug the USB into it, and then plug that into the, you know, so that the Chromecast thing has power. But, you know, if your TV's got a USB port, then you could just plug it into that, and that would be enough, should be enough to power it, because USB does power a lot. You know, there is a little bit of power that comes from USB ports. That's how you're able to, you know, for example, you charge up your iPad or your iPod from a USB port. It takes longer, but, you know, especially for an iPad, it takes longer, but it will eventually charge it up. But the little Chromecast unit probably, you know, doesn't take much power. But so in any case, the thing is powered, and then you have your tablet or you have your phone, and you simply there's a Chromecast button in the apps, and you simply tap on that, and that sends it to your Chromecast unit. And then you can just, you know, set your tablet or your phone aside, because, you know, you're sort of using your tablet as a remote or your phone as a remote. And from what they're saying, you can even control the volume from your phone or your tablet. So this thing is sort of its own unit, and it has an open API, and so they're adding other things are, you know, they're adding the ability to stream directly to this thing. So it's not, I was under the impression that it was going through, it was using, let's say if you were going to stream Netflix, that it would actually come to your phone and then from your phone to the Chromecast. Well, what's actually happening, you're controlling the Chromecast from your phone, but Netflix, for example, or YouTube would be another example. YouTube would stream from YouTube, the YouTube servers, the YouTube service, directly to the Chromecast. You're simply turning, you're simply controlling the Chromecast, you know, what gets streamed to it with your phone or tablet. So you're sort of using your phone or tablet as sort of a kind of a remote control. And so that's kind of a neat idea. You know, it's kind of like Roku. You know, I've got my Roku box, and I've got, you know, Netflix and all kinds of other things that I can stream directly, you know, from the whatever service to the Roku box. So this is sort of, you know, $35. So it's less expensive than a Roku box. And you know, of course, Roku. I think the cheapest one's like $49, and it comes with the remote control. So in this case, the Chromecast is $35, and you're using your tablet or your phone as the controlling device, as the remote control. So that's kind of a neat idea, and. Of course, this Chromecast unit is very small. It would easily fit in your computer bag or your if you've got a bag for your iPad or whatever, it would easily fit in that. So it's kind of a neat little solution, and especially if you wanted to, you're streaming YouTube. Now, maybe Michael can tell me, once he listens to this, how sensitive is the Chromecast, how sensitive is it to Wi-Fi? Does it pick up Wi-Fi signals really easily, or does it need more robust Wi-Fi signals, or is it, you know, because different devices have varying degrees of sensitivity to Wi-Fi. You know, I've noticed that myself over the years, that some things just seem to be more sensitive than other, some devices seem more sensitive than others, and I'm just, you know, maybe someone can tell me how sensitive is this Chromecast to Wi-Fi? Is it, you know, so that's a question that's kind of, you know, remains to be answered. But looks like a pretty, I would think that if your iPad or, you know, if whatever, if you're getting a fairly decent signal with, let's say, with an iPad or an iPhone, that probably the Chromecast would, you know, pick the same signal up and probably not have any problem with it. You know, if, you know, and the, you know, any of those devices, if you really get into a fringe area, then you can start having problems. You know, because I notice that a lot of the places I go into, you know, they'll have free Wi-Fi, and I'll try to connect to the free Wi-Fi with my phone, and if, you know, if it's kind of way down there where it's really marginal signal, usually I don't even bother to connect, because the performance usually is pretty bad. But if the free Wi-Fi is a better signal, then usually it's worth connecting to, because then usually I can, provided the thing's working right, I can get pretty decent performance out of it. You know, kind of depending on where I'm at. But if a business is going to have free Wi-Fi, if they've done it right, they set it up so that they give you good coverage, at least inside their building. And I do run into some places that have ostensibly have free Wi-Fi, and they've not done a good job of spreading coverage throughout the public areas of their building. So, anyway, let's listen to another one of Ian's comments.
Yeah, here we go again, Tom. There's no battery in the Chromecast HDMI. It's a power plug goes in the back of the dongle, and then you have to attach it to your power supply, which some people are sort of saying, here we go again with wires. So that's one small point. Another point that people were making was that at first, I don't know if it still applies, but they were giving 3 months free Netflix with this thing. So some people were very happy about getting 3 months free Netflix with this Chromecast dongle for $35. They thought that alone would almost pay for it.
Okay, well, thank you again, Ian. Yeah, I've always said wires are sort of the bane, B-A-N-E, of electronics. You know, because we have all these wonderful electronic devices and stereo speakers and what have you, and they all have to plug in. So, you know, that's just one of the downside of, you know, you can enjoy all kinds of computers and electronics and stereos and what have you, but the downside is that they do have to plug in. Yeah, if they're still offering the 3 free months of Netflix, that's pretty good, because, you know, the streaming version of Netflix is like $8 a month in the U.S. Now, I don't know if the Canadian price is any different. Of course, Ian is in Canada. So I don't know if the Canadian price might be a little bit different. I'm not sure, but So three times eight is 24. So that's pretty good that they're offering three free months of Netflix. So anyway, let's go ahead and play Ian's fourth and final comment.
Hi there, Tom. You were mentioning that lightning produces fertilizer or a fertilizer effect. Would that be that it's producing nitrogen? Because I always keep thinking in my mind when I think of fertilizer, I think of high nitrogen content. So is the lightning reacting in the atmosphere to make extra nitrogen, which mix with the rain to fertilize the ground? So I'll let you think on that one.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. It makes a form of nitrogen, and I don't know. There's a bunch of websites. If you type in the appropriate search term into Google, then you'll get a bunch of websites that sort of, you know, some of them really do a good job of sort of describing the process. But it's quite an interesting effect. But our atmosphere, obviously, it's got some oxygen in it, and it's got a lot of nitrogen in it, and other elements in it. And then the lightning, I guess, gets so hot, so intensely hot that that's really what produces the nitrogen effect. So, pretty interesting. But I'd never heard that. And this has been known for years and years and years. But all I ever heard was that, people said, well, if it rains, it's going to produce a whole lot more growth than if you water it. You can water something and water it and water it, and you're going to get some growth. If you put fertilizer with it, then you can more approximate the effect of rain. But the rain itself, kind of comes self-contained with its own fertilizer, which is pretty amazing. So, anyhow, thank you, Ian. Now, I've got a couple of comments here from Scott. Now, I haven't listened to these, so we'll probably do a start-stop on them. So here is Scott from scottpodcast.com. Scott.
All right, Tom. Now you're talking about in another podcast, as I'm catching up, about your bout with poison ivy. Now, I have some experience with that, too. Not from first-hand experience. I am still, so far, fairly immune to it, but that changes. And you were starting to learn some of the things about poison ivy and oak, but you may not have read everything, and if you read more sites, you'll find out that there's some other interesting little aspects to this. And it comes under an even broader term, which is called, and you can look this up, contact dermatitis. Dermatitis, that's itis of the derm. That means infection or inflammation of the skin. So what that means is that there is more than just poison ivy and poison oak that can cause contact dermatitis. That's what the process is that they cause. They cause your skin to become infected and inflamed. And there are many other things that some people, not necessarily you, but some people are very allergic to. Judy has some things out there that she's allergic to that are not poison oak or poison ivy or anything even close. But as soon as she starts to do gardening with me, inevitably she will come up with a case of contact dermatitis somewhere on her. And almost always it'll either be on her leg where she brushed up against something, or on her hand where she was handling something. And once there, it will start to spread to, as you say, other areas. But the mechanism of that spreading was something that I would, from what I've read, I would debate with, I don't know if your doctor actually said this, but if he did, I would debate it. If you read more, you'll find that the The cause of this is an acid. In the case of poison ivy and poison oak, I can't remember the name of it, but it is an oil that is like acidic. It's caustic to the body. And this oil will be contained inside of these boils that are boiling up. That's the reason they're doing what they're doing, and they're trying to expel this out of the system. And so they start pushing fluids away from the body, to get it away from the body, because it's so horrible to it. And then it itches in the process. And so you scratch it, and you get it on your fingers without even thinking about it, and it doesn't take much. And then later on, you scratch your ear, and guess where it goes to? It goes right up to your ear, because you just put some on your ear. Or you scratch other places, like your privates you were talking about.
Okay, now let me interrupt. Of course, my privates swelled up. I mean, the whole thing swelled up. Not just, because it's one thing to have the little eruptions, on your hand or whatever, like I had them on my hand and I had some on my arms. And that's really where the eruptions were. And I actually got some on my, little bit on my ears. But what happened, my private parts, that wasn't the same eruption. That was an allergic reaction. You never, ever, ever, because you want to have that kind of a reaction down there, as far as the whole thing swelling up. That is very, very, people make jokes about it and what have you. It is no laughing matter. And I hadn't touched anything down there. That was just a pure allergic reaction. Now, you can be allergic to anything. It's possible that you can actually be allergic to heat. You can be, people can have an allergic reaction to cold. You can actually be allergic to anything. So, but now it's debatable. Some people think that the clear fluid that's coming out of these eruptions, some people believe that will actually produce an allergic reaction. And if you read the articles about it, they say, no, it really doesn't. Only the oil itself, in the case of poison ivy or poison oak or poison sumac, only that oil itself can cause the reaction. So that, it's debatable one way or the other. But so I only had it on my hands, had it on the backs of my hands, I also had it on my, on my arms, mostly on my forearms. And that was pretty much it. I didn't get it really anywhere else, although my chest was kind of itching, but I didn't have any of the eruptions. See, I had the hives. I was having hives, and that's basically what, when my private part swelled up, that was hives. That was not poison ivy. That was hives, and I had a hive reaction to the poison ivy. Because I had the regular poison ivy reaction, but then I had the hives because I was very allergic to the poison ivy. So I had two different things going on, and and then I had an allergic reaction to the prednisone on top of that. Of course, I was taking the prednisone to try to mitigate the other symptoms. Very unpleasant experience, but it's all in the past now, and I am very careful about not touching any leaves or anything that's really green. I'm just kind of, even though I know it's probably fine, not pressing my luck, just not touching it. And but the poison ivy, I've heard stories about people saying, well, I'm not allergic to poison ivy, and then they'll rub it all over themselves, and maybe they can get away with it, but maybe they can't. Maybe they're pressing their luck. Maybe they just think that they're not allergic to it, and then and that, it turns out they really are, but I've heard stories where people really thought they weren't allergic to it, and they really were rubbing it all over themselves in really bad places, and then they had really bad reactions, and they were just absolutely miserable as a result. So even if you think you're not allergic to it, don't press your luck. You know, and if you're, and if you are having, you know, he's talking about Judy, kind of reacting, working in the garden. If I really wanted to work in a garden and I knew that it was going to cause some kind of a reaction like that, I'd be taking special precautions, maybe invest in a hazmat suit.
That's where it goes to. So this is one of the ways I understand that this can actually spread, because you actually spread it yourself. That's why they say you should not itch this stuff. You should not touch it. You should wrap it and avoid and resist itching it, because it not only doesn't the itch get itched, it doesn't feel better after you itch it, it actually spreads it. So you have to do what's completely not normal. It's kind of like a cough. You know, when you have a cough and then you cough, it's like scratching an itch. You're scratching an itch in your throat. When you do that, as often as not, you can actually make it more itchy. And then you'll cough more and more and more. Whereas if you can resist that cough, and I've done this oftentimes, you can make that cough go away very quickly. But you have to resist that coughing initially, which can be very tough. In this case, you have to resist the itching. So just a little more information. And again, I welcome you to check this out for yourself. You don't have to take my word for it. There is science in this. But there's a lot to be said about contact dermatitis and in general, and in specific poison ivy, poison oak, and other poisonous things. Another thing, yeah, I did was going to mention this and didn't. Some people are relatively immune to it compared to others, but it doesn't necessarily stay that way. You can be made sensitive to it by repeated exposures to it. And the more times you are exposed to it, the more sensitive you can actually get to it. So it might be over many years, you never had any problem with it, and then one day, wow, look at this, you know, never had this before. Well, you know, you've built up this sensitivity to it, though you didn't know it, and now you're there. You're over the tipping point. So there's also that, and I'm relatively immune to it. I say relatively because I have gotten, you know, little bubbles of it here and there, and they take a while to go away, but they eventually do go away, and they're nowhere near as bad as what Judy gets, which turn into oozing messes, and like you say, pretty gross. You wouldn't want to, it'd be TMI talking about it, but anybody who's ever had this stuff knows exactly what we mean, and so that's the stuff you have to watch out for spreading. You want to sop it up, you want to, you know, make sure it isn't spread in other parts of the body, and it's so important to do that. I don't know, I'm going to find out what the guy actually did for you, but my assumption is nowadays what they give you are steroids, steroidal creams, and sometimes steroid pills to fight it off. That's what they gave Judy. She's one of these people, doesn't believe in doctors, didn't want to go that much. She does go. She goes more than many. But she didn't want to go for this, and she resisted, and it got worse and worse and worse and worse, and eventually she went, and they had to give her a couple of shots, actually, of steroids to get this thing, you know, down, because it's a body reaction, and so you got to take some heavy-duty action sometimes to get things under control. And then after that, she had to use some steroidal creams, and then beyond that, there's some other more mundane things you can use to control it in the early stages if it's not gotten that far. Treatments for that. Calamine used to be one of the old ways of doing it. You may remember that. You're going to need an ocean of calamine lotion. All right, catch you later.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. Yeah, the what you want to do is wash that oil off. You know, so if you think that you've brushed up against something like poison ivy, poison oak, poison sumac, immediately, you know, wash thoroughly, wash that oil off, because the oil, this oil with poison ivy, poison oak, poison sumac, this is rush oil, I think is the name of it. It is actually inert. It's not alive, and so you can actually have this, let's say you have some of this on something, you can actually touch that, you know, get it on you a year later, and your immune system is still going to react to it. So it's an immune system reaction, that, and about 2 out of 3 people have an immune system reaction to this oil. And maybe 1 in 3, roughly 1 in 3 people don't have the reaction. But don't press your luck. Even if you think you're not allergic to it, or maybe you know you're not allergic to it, don't be touching it to prove that you're not, you know, because you can become allergic to it. And in fact, you can become allergic to virtually anything. Now, some things obviously are more likely than others to become allergic to, you know, different foods and substances and what have you. There are some common things that people become allergic to. But you can become allergic to virtually anything. The best thing, leaves of three, it's the old saying, leaves of three, leave it be. Now, I had, I did go to the doctor, after the genital swelling started and I had the hives. I did go to the doctor, and the doctor gave me a shot of steroids. Now, I think that I'm allergic to, I'm allergic to the steroids. There are people that are allergic, and I don't think the steroids really did anything for me. Of course, my mom gave me some prednisone tablets, and those caused an allergic, kind of an ongoing allergic reaction, hives. And, it was, I basically went 3 weeks or so, about 3 weeks, 3 weeks with the hives. You know, normally you have the hives and it's over in just a few hours, and, you know, it's kind of intolerable when it's happening. I had the hives for about 2.5 weeks or more. And, and I was working at the same time, very, just as busy as could be, and very miserable. Stay away from leaves of three. Leaves of three, leave it be. So I got another comment here from Scott. This is a little bit shorter one, so once again, here is Scott.
Well, I got to say, it is a pleasure to hear you talking things more science than not science on this podcast, because you've been forced to get into science, and you looked up the whole situation on WebMD, which is a pretty much science-based site, so you're going to get good information there. That's a decent website. Unlike many other websites that people seem to go to and believe, this is a point I tried to make about science basis non-science, because often you tend to come out and say that you don't believe science if it doesn't meet with your smell test or some other, instinctual thing.
Let me interrupt. Just because now you're saying WebMD, and of course that's where I got the information about the poison ivy, and so that's what he's commenting on. So, I mean, what it was on WebMD, that's fine. But there, the other, what you're getting into next is that you're going to say, well, there's other areas where you won't take science, like there are people that say science says that there's global warming and that man-made global warming is science. And you have to accept it. Science. Well, there are a lot of things being done in the name of science that really aren't scientific. They're, I have my own common sense. I have my own BS detector. I have my own common sense. And what I said in the very first part of the podcast, you have to be willing, just because you read it on a website, or some scientist, the consensus is that man-made global warming is happening. Well, just because, you know, somebody, you know, they're scientists and they say we have a consensus, you have to believe it. No, you don't. Just because let's say Stephen Hawking says something. Do I have to believe it? No, I don't have to believe it. You know, if it makes sense, I'll consider it. But every word that comes out of his mouth is not, he's not God. And a lot of people look at him that way. Of course, if you don't know who Stephen Hawking is, the famous physicist that is in the wheelchair and he has a really debilitating muscular disease. And so he uses the computer voice, kind of taps it out. He can move his fingers a little bit and he sort of taps out the thing. And then the voice, the computer voice, reads out, you know, basically reads what the sentences that he's typed. So, you know, he's really, you know, kind of famous, but people sort of worship him. So with some things, you have to be willing, and you have to be able, actually, to just suspend your disbelief. And some people can't do that. And it's unfortunate. You have to be able to do that. So anyway, let's go ahead and listen to the rest of the comment.
...that you're just going to know when things are right. Obviously, that doesn't work in many cases because, you know, you end up in trouble because of what you don't know and what you think you know. And this poison ivy is exactly such a situation where what you thought you knew or what you didn't know got you in trouble. Whereas if you'd actually followed science on this all along, studied these things when other people had them, things like that, you might have been able to avoid it ahead of it and save a lot of suffering. However, at least you didn't...
And you're not making any sense. Study science... Because I knew when I was, you know, I was cleaning the fence out, I knew that there was a good chance... It was in the back of my mind that there could have been some poison ivy there, and I just wasn't paying attention. That's my fault. I wasn't paying attention. Now, had I, you know, I know what poison ivy is, and I've looked at WebMD before, and I've looked at a lot of other sites. There's plenty of sites that give you, you know, that talk about different medical problems and so on and so forth, and different kind of allergic reactions. So, I guess, are you suggesting that if I would have looked up poison ivy before and really studied and know what the leaves look like, that I would have been watching for it? Is that what you're suggesting? Because once I got it, you know, and I knew I had the reaction, the first thing I did, I went to the doctor. You know, I knew I was having an allergic reaction. It was more than just, you know, kind of itching on my hand or whatever, or my arms. I was having a really bad allergic reaction. And I know enough to, you know, you're having a bad allergic reaction, especially if you got genital swelling, you know, Benadryl ain't going to get it. You better go to the doctor, even though the doctor probably gave me the wrong thing. The doctor gave me a shot of steroids, and I believe I'm allergic to steroids. So, you know, so, but... As far as knowing what the leaves look like, I don't, you know, I didn't really care before. I'm sure I've seen poison ivy, and I've heard people say, well, it was leaves of three, leave it be. I've heard people say that before. However, I guarantee you now that I went through this, lived through this, you know, and it went on for more than a month before, you know, probably a month and a half before I was completely over it. Guarantee you I pay attention to the damn stuff now. You know, so there's but I don't know how you know, studying, you know, paying attention to science or something would have stopped this from happening. I was simply careless and I ended up brushing against the stuff, and I did after I when I was cleaning the thing out, that was before I had any problem at all. I didn't have any reaction that day, so I went ahead immediately afterwards because I was worried more about ticks. I took a bath and really kind of, you know, washed everything off. And had I not done that, I would have probably had an even worse allergic reaction. So I don't see where science kind of comes into this. There's certain things you can look up and, you know, on websites and what have you. And, you know, and you can, I don't know. I think you're trying to make a point where there's none to be made.
Do what Judy did and resist it because you don't believe in doctors at all. And get worse and worse and worse. At least you went to somebody who's science-based to cure it, which is why I scratch my head sometimes and wonder if you would choose a doctor instead of a witch doctor to solve your problems with, you know. And by the way, a witch doctor is effectively what people are calling on when they go with these home solutions and the other and some of these other silly things out there, like homeopathic. It's one of the most witch doctor things there are out there.
Now, have I ever done that? Have I ever suggested homeopathy? Or I think you may have me confused with somebody else. I've never, ever, that I can remember, I've never suggested, you know, some, you know, home remedies as opposed to, you know, if you've got some sort of a problem, I've never suggested home remedies. So I don't know where that's coming from.
Homeopathic means you take something that might work and you dilute it down to such fine amounts, parts per million in water, that basically you've just got water. There's less parts per million than there are contagions in normal water supplies. And then they say, this is what will help you out. Now, their claim that it won't hurt you and it's all natural is all true, because water won't hurt you and it's all natural. But there's so little active agent in it that it can't help you. But, of course, by placebo effect, with many people, it does. And you get these testimonials. You know, companies like Airborne and so many others that supposedly help you to boost up your immune system and all this other. And they're complete poppycock. They don't have any science. In fact, they were sued. Airborne was sued out of making their claims. And this is why I call them the witch doctors. And I know a lot of people that believe in them. And you know what? Honestly, if it's working for you, like Dr. Phil says, how's that working for you? I guess if it's working for you and it makes you feel good and gets rid of your pain and all that, great. You know, the mind-body effect of believing in something is amazing. You know, the placebo effect works amazingly well. But doggone it, you know, for things that can't just be cured that easily, I wouldn't want to go to a witch doctor. And I don't, hopefully you wouldn't either. And so if you believe in science, if science is what you call on when you have no other options, which I would assume you didn't in this case, you'd run out of your own options and what you knew, so you called on real science, why wouldn't you believe in science for other things? You know, because if you think science is a bunch of BS, then why use it at all?
I don't know. Somehow, and I don't know, you give me some specific examples of where, you know, because you're always saying that, you know, and, you know, you said it in other voice files for the podcast, and then besides that, you know, we have voice files back and forth, you know, which that's private. You know, the voice files that Scott and I do back and forth, those never come into the podcast. But the voice files coming in for the podcast, you've said this a number of times, that somehow I'm not, you know, I'm rejecting science. Now, how, you know, science, what is science? It's a system you think logically. So you have logic and you have facts and you experiment, you know, and there's a so-called scientific method. Now, I think probably where, you know, maybe you're thinking about, I just don't accept this idea, and it goes back to the global warming thing. I don't accept the idea that there is such a thing as man-made global warming. I don't care. You know, you have these people that come along and they say that, you know, so many scientists, there's a scientific consensus that man-made global warming exists and it's a problem and so on and so forth. And I reject that. I'm sorry. Science, the history of science, the history of humanity is replete with, you know, you go back, in history, and you know the guy that came up with the idea that, you know, because at one time science believed that the Earth was the center of the universe, and if you come up with some other idea that the Earth and the other planets actually revolve around the sun. You know, they're ready to kill you. You know, and so on and so forth. And there's been a long history of, you know, people, you know, the group of scientists accept the idea that such and such, and somebody else comes along and says, no, it isn't. What, it could be this way. Oh, no. And they all start to, you know, eat him. So I'll go back to this. Is gravity a push or is it a pull? I believe it's a push. I believe we're being, you know, the reason that I have weight and I'm sitting here and I'm sitting on the edge of my bed and the edge of the bed is being kind of pushed down is because gravity is pushing on me. Now, I know Scott is probably listening to this, and he's going into conniption fits, and he thinks that I'm listening to some witch doctor or something, and he cannot conceive that it's anything other than what, you know, the scientists have said it was. Someone else, you know, has said this is what it is and you can't deviate from that or else you're that's heresy. You have to be able to think these things out yourself. I'm sorry, you have to be able to do that, and if you can't, then you just have to live by what someone else told you. You know, and of course they're always, you know, they'll say one thing and, you know, this is how it is. And then they come along later and said, nope, they'll reverse themselves. No, we were wrong. It was actually this way. And I can't tell you how many times that's happened over the years where they'll say, you know, this is the accepted dogma, basically. It's like a religion, isn't it? You know, this is the accepted dogma for whatever. And then they'll come along later and say, oops, sorry, we're wrong. It was actually this way. It's actually the other way around. So some things I can accept. That's fine. You know, but other things, like global warming, and I think that's what we're talking about, because that's where, now that I think about it, that's where all the, you know, the comments were from before. I don't believe in man-made global warming. I just don't believe it. And it's pretty obvious to me that a lot of this evidence, you know, this Hansen guy, they just made this stuff up, and they were changing the data, sort of falsifying the data to try to make it fit their story. And they got caught at it. So you have to have your own BS detector. And if you don't have it, then you're just at the mercy of whatever the greatest pressure is. And you'll believe that that's your idea. Well, that's fine. You believe what you believe. I'll believe what I'm able to see for myself. Then I'll believe it. Some of the things are perfectly acceptable, but there are other things like the man-made global warming idea. I don't accept that. Sorry.
Why would you have even gone to the doctor? if science doesn't know anything, it's corrupt and no good and all that sort of thing. You know, I that's what I kind of wonder. As I've said many times, I'm kind of a pure science kind of guy, and 99.999% of stuff I believe in is science-based. I say that because there are some things that, such as my faith, that cannot be scientifically proven, and therefore that's where I go a little off-center. But short of that, I'm a scientist, and I don't find that there's a problem between science and God either. I think that the two, some people think there's a big conflict. I really don't. I can explain that more on, in other files, or if people want to write me and ask me or something. I've talked about that, things such as evolution and why doesn't the proof of evolution disprove God. Well, it doesn't. You know, it's just a tool on his tool belt. You know. Anyway, got to go, but I just wanted to, you know, question, you know, why all this animosity towards science when it's obvious you choose science when it comes down to who you're going to have help you out in a pinch when nothing else is left. And it worked because it is science. It wasn't pseudoscience. It wasn't home remedies. It wasn't any of that stuff.
Hey, well, thank you, Scott. I have no animosity to the idea of science and logic. I have no animosity towards that. In fact, I have no animosity towards anyone. But that doesn't mean that I have to just automatically accept ideas because someone's got a big, long pedigree after their name and they say that they're a scientist, they claim to be a scientist. If it doesn't pass my smell test, I'm not accepting it. And it's not because I don't have any animosity. It's simply I don't. You know, I have to be able to, it has to make common sense to me. And if it doesn't, sorry. Too bad, I don't have to believe it. But it doesn't have to be all or nothing. You know, just because somebody, you know, the doctor is the doctor and the doctor's got experience and so on and so forth. And the doctor went to school and he's got his doctor pedigree. Well, that's fine and dandy. You know, I'll go to the doctor. I don't have a problem with going to the doctor. But I don't have to, you know, on the other hand, I am not completely locked in to everything that, you know, anyone that claims to be a scientist, I'm not forced, I'm not enslaved to believing everything that comes out of their mouths. Or everything that's said in the name of science. Because, quite frankly, there's a lot of lies flying around. Just because somebody says they're a scientist, does that mean that they're suddenly, that they don't lie? That they never lie? Of course it doesn't. They lie all the time. They're people too. So, you know, all kinds of people have all kinds of agendas. And you have to have your own BS detector. If you don't, you can't rely on my BS detector. You can't rely on, you know, your politician's BS. You've got to rely on your own. And if you can't, you're in trouble. So, but nice try. Trying to think that, well, it's all or nothing, and I think your thought there was a little probably misguided. I think you're trying to equate me going to the doctor somehow with being inconsistent with not believing in the God of science or something. I don't know. Doesn't make any sense. So, but thank you anyway for the comment. Nice try. So anyway, I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off. We're at almost at 80 minutes. Save the comments from Jeremy. I'll save those for the next time, the Voxer the conversation that we had. So in any case, hope everyone is having a great weekend, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com. I'm going to go to the next one.